Hi, this is John Ryan with TeamHandballNews.com. Joining me on the line is Craig Rote. Craig, how are you doing today?
I am doing great on this election day.
Election day. The apocalypse is coming.
This is the last interview ever on the internet.
Well, you know, I actually, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later. I was going to do a real tangent broadcast and I even thought about putting a vote thing up there and actually see USA Team Handball membership. What would it be percentage-wise, Trump and Clinton? I think that would be an interesting microcosm of the United States.
I try not to get too involved in the political discourse.
All right. Well, real quick here, I'll just – give a shout out there to anybody with a handball related product that's interested in advertising on the podcast. We'd be happy to do that. If you'd like more information on a potential advertisement, just contact me at john.ryan@teamhandballnews.com. And we got another number of different options, both for advertising on the podcast or the website. Just give me a email and we'll talk. But now we're going to talk about youth development in the United States, and who better to talk about that than Craig Rote. Craig's been, well, I'll let him talk a little bit about himself, but he's been involved now in handball for how many years, Craig?
Since 2009 officially, so full-fledged 7 years now.
Full-fledged 7 years, and you'll be hard-pressed to see anyone who's done more in 7 years involvement in the sport than Craig. But yeah, we'll start off a little bit about that, Craig. You know, some people know you, some people don't. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in handball.
Well, I used to live in France, and I first saw handball when I lived in the south of France back in 1999. So, and I went a decade trying to find the sport and located it with Minnesota Team Handball as they were just starting up and took over leadership with Wilder Freed of the Minnesota team, and basically spent 4 years learning not just about the sport, but learning about running the sport. We had the 2012 national championships we hosted. I was the event director of that. And then I started my youth focus around 2012, 2013, which has become my passion and really my sole handball related activity, even though I have many different programs. So that was pretty much my handball background. I did a graduate research project at the University of Minnesota, creating the mini handball pilot program for the United States. And created a book that has subsequently been picked up by the IHF for their academic work. So that's
excellent.
Where I'm at.
Tell us a little bit about your program in Barrington, Illinois, which I'm guessing is a suburb of Chicago.
Yeah, the Barrington's a northwest suburb of Chicago. When I moved here in 2014, I started writing curriculum for the district. And now all the schools in the district play team handball. They play for about 3 weeks to a month a year. I walk around town and the kids are always like, it's the handball guy, because I go in and I help train the teachers to implement the curriculum. And so I know most of the kids in the district. So of the, you know, 14,000 kids in the district, most of them know me or have seen me.
What age groups are the school programs focused on?
Well, the main focus is through eighth grade, and I'm just cracking high school now. So I write handball related curriculum for first through third, which is kind of an amended learning throwing skills, footwork skills, simple tactical stuff, and then my mini games and drills really kind of begin around third, fourth grade, and continue on through eighth grade. So the kids learn, they spend a month learning all aspects of the sport. And then when we move into high school now, I'm just cracking that market this year. So,
but as far as the school-specific programs, the kids in the Barrington School District, are they introduced They're introduced to it, what grade, and it's actually in the classroom.
Yeah, it's in the PE class, and they're introduced to it. And some of the schools opted to start at third grade. Some of the schools start in first grade.
Okay.
So basically, I bring sport related games to the younger groups. They're more general, not throw a ball at a big ball, move it across the room, start get the idea of how like games flow and movement of an invasion game. And then around third grade, it becomes really sport specific. And then in the area, I then have a club that many kids then come for higher level training,
right.
2 to 3 days a week.
They're introduced it basically just about any kid going to Barrington now is going to get it in third, fourth, fifth grade.
Yes, especially through the core pipeline through eighth grade. They're going to receive it at both the middle schools and at all 10 elementary schools. I have other communities, and I mean, so I'm Barrington focused with part of my program, but then I have lots of schools that do it outside of Barrington, that I've helped, implement curriculum in nearby Crystal Lake.
But focusing on Barrington right now, each kid, do they get like, they get it in third grade, then they get it in fourth grade.
They get it in fifth grade. Yeah. All the way.
So the kid going into school, he's like, by the time he's in fifth or sixth grade, he's going, oh, cool, we're going to do handball again.
Oh, yeah, they get all excited when they see the handball gear out now. Because now it's so for – this was the third year now of implementation at some of these schools. So some of these schools were doing their third year of it. So the kids are really starting to get better. Not just better, but they understand the rules. They understand when they switch to the – it's usually after an outdoor unit in the fall. I think most of the district this year did October and November.
All right. And so your involvement with the schools is you help introduce the unit to them, and now the teachers themselves are familiar enough with the sport. Are they pretty much teaching in their PE classes with a minimum of help?
So basically, I come the first year and I introduce the sport, and I work – directly, I work in the classroom, but I'm really working with the teacher on how to implement it. And then from there, they pretty much take it over, and I come in maybe for one or two fun days per unit to come in and play with the kids and just see how it's going and maybe make some minor adjustments. Each school population has a different athletic base. And so some schools are ready to take on maybe some more difficult curriculum, and other schools just need to have more play-based curriculum.
Okay. And so you did that with the schools, basically volunteering, saying, hey, here, I'm helping you. Let's learn a little bit about handball.
Yeah, that's how I approach the district. And then a lot of the teachers now travel with me to – like last year, we did the Illinois IAPERD State PE Convention. And so my staff for that convention, where we had like 200 teachers in attendance, was my staff from the District 220 Barrington School District. PE staff came with me, and we were the ones doing the curriculum and the curriculum display at the convention.
Okay. And then outside of school – you've developed an after-school program for kids that are more interested to play the sport?
Yeah. And so then within the community through the Barrington Park District, they can register for Barrington Team Handball Club, which has girls and boys mixed mini handball, which is basically up through fifth grade. Then it has middle school, separate programs for the girls and separate programs for the boys. And now this year we started our new high school program, which has about 20 boys playing in it right now. And I'm looking – fall's the most difficult. Fall is without a doubt my most hair-pulling session to try to get people registered for. Winter becomes my very robust time. So I'm looking forward to the winter session, which will start second week of January.
Okay. And what about a spring session?
The spring session also. Spring session tends to be more focused on national team preparations for Europe. But the majority of the winter session, because all my only conflict is basketball, and I tend to be at a time that I don't have court conflicts with basketball. I get a lot of the basketball kids playing, and I get all the soccer kids, and I get all the football kids. In spring, my only conflict is baseball and some soccer for the girls. And so it's this year was my first year with the girls program.
You're not conflicted with basketball in winter?
No, it tends to be I'm not. I have a different schedule than the local basketball teams here, which tend to be early Saturday for the Saturday, and I'm later Saturday afternoon. So okay. Most of the basketball conflicts are done, and I might have an occasional game conflict. But since my practices are 7 to 8:30 in the evenings, Monday through Thursday, I tend not to have too many school-related conflicts. So if you play for your school basketball team, you're already done by 6 o'clock.
Okay. And to me, that's one of the big things I think that you have done is you've actually got kids and their parents actually, you know, paying, you know, putting money out there to go play handball. That's a big thing. I don't know how many people realize that. That's a big accomplishment.
I think in many ways the quality of the programming matters, and I moved from a city urban environment, which I would say the standard of or the quality standard was lower than it is in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, where parents expect established coaching terms to between them and their kids, between the coaches and the kids. So I think it's been a as we've grown, I think part of the reason we've found some success is that the kids get a lot of opportunity to play. I give them a flexible schedule, so if you sign up for my class, you have it in the book, it says you're getting 2 1.5 hour practices, but I often offer 1 to 2 extra practices a week for free for the kids, so they can have alternate times to come in. So a lot of my kids will train 4 days a week and love it, love to come in on the other days and maybe do position-specific stuff with an assistant coach versus having to be, you know, while the younger guys are playing, having high schoolers at the other end working on position-specific, you know, drills with an assistant. So I've opened up more value for their dollar, I think, than most programs can.
Sure. And like I said, I think that's, you know, parents and kids have choices on what they can do after school. Well, and for folks to make the decision to say, yeah, I want to play handball. That's a big thing. And that speaks well for your program.
And a huge part this year is in this introduction of new competition, having Alberta come down to compete against the national champions from Canada, being competitive against them, now playing college and lower level club teams, having 25 to 30 games during a season now. So we're increasing the value of the product by surviving those tough early years. I mean, the early years are tough because you're telling them it'll come, but they don't know.
Yeah.
They really don't know.
What about the possibility of, you know, expansion? And I'll say this, you know, I think it's great that your guys are playing, you know, an Alberta team, but, you know, Chicago's got a huge population base. Wouldn't it be cool if you could get, you know, 4 or 5 Barringtons playing and then, you know, a local league playing at that level?
Well, so that was our original – another woman and I, who's been like my sidekick, and I were, our original plan was to do a 501c3, which we've now been establishing, and it's a youth initiative, and it was mindful and focused on the nation. But after I came back from Sweden this last year, we've changed and altered the plan, and the plan now is to be to establish, just like you're saying, really to focus on Chicago, make Chicago like a Sweden within the Midwest, expand out from there, but really to have 6 to 8 strong teams continually training, continually playing against each other in a league. The Windy City Team Handball League is my vision. I mean, it truly is my vision right now, and to establish these clubs. And so I've now become a youth director on the Chicago Inter board, and I'm really helping them to develop youth programming. It's going to likely start next summer with a camp where we're going to invite some top coaches from the hemisphere and some players from Europe to really introduce to Chicago the sport of handball, so we can have a bigger base here, and that truly saves us costs. I mean, the costs of travel are burdensome, especially when your only competition's in Europe or in Canada. So
exactly, and that, you know, that's one of the things we've talked, you know, about you know, different you know, on occasion you and I have had some Facebook debates that others have chimed in on in the past, and you know, that's where you know, we can talk about that. We can start, you know, going into the, you know, the national level efforts that you have, because well, I'll say this, nobody, sometimes people get wrong, you know, like I'm against development, and I'm like hugely for it, and it's just like, you know, I see some issue of having to fly teams over to Europe and fly teams to Alberta, and I see part of it, hey, you need the competition, but the other part of me says, like, wow, that's an expense, that's an investment, you know, can we, you know, build within so that we don't have to go on those trips like that. And that's
the key. And so what I've done, so I've just established 6 dates. And so because my top level guys are high school students and all are look like grown men and have the physicality of grown men, we are going to begin taking on local colleges. So we've offered up 6 dates this year to our facility here. So there's no travel to Chicago Inter, Milwaukee United, and Illinois State University. And if other teams and clubs, and I've already gotten some notes from other clubs wishing to come to some of those dates, wish to come and compete with us, that is great. That'll be great training for us as a base, but also I already have the space. I already own that court time through my contract with the Park District. So it's not a side expense to host something separate. It just takes me to reschedule some of the other programs on those 6 out of 20 dates.
Yes.
So,
well, I'll date myself a little bit, but when I was living in California in the late 1980s, the Boys and Girls Clubs in California, they had a little bit of a league going, and then they created a team out of the Boys and Girls Clubs. Most of them were based on in Ventura, but I would say that 4 national team members came off of that team, and they would play in the tournaments, you know, and they would get, the first year or so, they got their butts kicked, but they kept getting better.
We had a meeting in Sweden. We had a meeting in Sweden with the soon to be, or what was going to become, the youth national, or the youth regional and / national team players that played in Sweden this last year. And we all decided to get that it's worth us getting our butts kicked to play high level competition. And so we're part of this next phase for us is doing just that, playing up against grown men, or, you know, soon to be grown men in college, and learning to really play a high level of handball in that environment, because we just need the games.
Yeah. Well, as long as you don't go too far up.
Oh, we're not going to play NIAC. We're not going to play New York Athletic Club. But,
well, you know, they're a bunch of old men. You guys can take them.
Yeah, we can run them down, but they only outweigh us by 80 pounds a position. but I could see us going to a college tournament and getting some wins. I mean, these guys, I mean, my guys train 7 months a year, 4 days a week. I mean, they're getting quite good at handball now.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, if I was Illinois State and I heard a bunch of 14, 15-year-olds, I don't know what the ages of your team is, are going to beat me, college athlete, age athlete, oh, that's kind of one of those no-win situation games for them, get beat by a bunch of kids.
Yeah, but they're a bunch of kids that can play. And they look, to tell you the truth, they look older than most college-age players. These are some big boys.
Well, you know, that was another issue that we talked about from time to time. You know, you've got a youth team plan, and the question that comes up from time to time, and this is where people go like, you can't make John Ryan happy about anything. He's going to find a problem with anything. And that's where I say that, you know, the type of athlete sometimes that you get in high school, to the one, if somebody willing to focus on handball, you're getting that second tier athlete, because the really good athlete is going to be focused on his high school sport. If he's a really good basketball player, he's going to have that as his primary sport, and that's where he's going to be focused. The guy that you're going to get is the guy that isn't quite as good as that guy athletically. That's the argument that comes in. So you're focused on developing some athletes that maybe they're second tier or third tier athletes. What's your response to that argument?
My response to that argument always is that I'm always simultaneously increasing the quality of the players that I currently am training, and I'm always increasing the stock of the players I'm recruiting. And so I can't say, I won't go into the first tier, second tier, because I have some elite athletes in my core group that can do some amazing things on the court, and with developmental time are going to be incredible players. Like, I fully believe that, not in a doting parent way, but in a doubting Susan starting point, where I just have worked and worked and worked to develop them through all of their issues from other sports, or not issues, all of their base from other sports. Right? Issues was a negative connotation. I meant like their positive things, and to develop them into handball players, to take what they do well and improve that to such a point that they can really play handball at a high level. And so there's always going to be that top athlete that has the basketball mindset, let's say. And am I even attempting to approach that person? No. But I can have his teammates play for me. And those teammates are awesome athletes. And so you can call them first division, second division, top tier, second tier, whichever you want to call it. But those are incredible athletes to deal with. Because the top tier is such a minority percentage. I mean, top tier is you go. I go into a school. I will say this, though, in one of the Crystal Lake schools, and it's the boy that's starting at center back for us now, playing up 2 years. He was the top rated athlete at his middle school. He's a freak at everything he does, like out of this, like off the charts. He's now in the punt, pass, and kick finals as an eighth grader. So he's just, and so I'm able to attract those type of athletes now because the product is awesome. Well, I mean, that's my benefit.
Here's the skeptic, though. If he's doing punt, pass, and kick, surely he's playing football.
No, he's not. His parents wouldn't let him.
Okay. Well, I can see you guys maybe getting some parents afraid of concussions, although the only concussion I ever got was playing handball.
But if you only ever play handball, that's...
Well, I played high school football. I'm sure I had some concussions then. I just don't remember it. Back in the old school days, you just kept playing.
But that's also a key point. And that was one of the things I talked about with the CBS News when they came to interview me, was that it's a great alternative for a physical sport without concussions being a prescient part of the gameplay. All sports have the freak occurrence. You cannot outlaw and rule out the freak occurrence for knee injury or for head injury. You know, you trip on someone's foot, falling backwards at that one precise time and hit your head a certain way on a wall. You know, it could happen. You know, those you can't. But as a contact sport, we legislate out head contact to the head during gameplay. So that's one of the differences. And I think some of these parents whose children are looking for an outlet other than football that's physical are now starting to come to me, because I've had this conversation maybe 15, 20 times over the last year and a half with parents about, oh, I like this. You're physical, but you're not ruthless or brutal.
Oh, yeah. If you want to go on a physicality scale, football's a 10. Yeah. You know, maybe rugby's an 8. Maybe handball's a 6.
Yeah, I would say 6. It's physical, but it's within a really small confine of acceptability.
Sure.
And it's within that, it's rough. And that's one of the things I love about it. And that's one of the things that I was attracted to, is that it was fast, dynamic, and hard hitting. But that hard hitting was never directed at an opponent's vulnerability. Where football is, I played football, it's solely about vulnerability.
Sure.
You know, it's to render them so they can't play. You know, you want to hit the hit that puts their star out of the game.
Yeah.
You do.
Well, I mean, we can debate, you know, tier one, tier two, level one, level two, however you want to define those athletes. But there's certainly going to be some skilled athletes that you're never really going to get fully engaged in handball until they're done with their primary sport.
I would argue it this way, that I have a window of opportunity in the middle school years where strangely athletes choose, have like their parents have kind of like fueled through the elementary years, and then the athletes choose during the middle school years. And then it kind of goes back to an expectation based in high school. And so I may lose some athletes in high school, and I hope I plant and water a seed that will help me retain them. I'm always thinking about retention of these type of players during the high school years, because it becomes more cultural based, meaning like I want to be the point guard on my high school basketball team, varsity, you know. And so it's different than playing for a travel team where your school doesn't see you. So it's once you re-enter the schools at the high school level, it becomes a bit of a game to retain top level athletes. But I'm up to the game. I'm willing to play it.
Well, I think it's going to be tough to win that game.
I won't win it every time.
I think you're going to lose it 90% of the time.
But if I lose it 90% of the time now, I'll lose it 70% of the time next year. Because I'll learn from that 20. I'll learn in that 10% victory how to improve my message or improve the quality to find out what they want. I mean, that's really my mindset. It's a game.
I would argue that it's such a tough argument for like a really top athlete, one that thinks he might be able to get a scholarship in basketball or football. It seems to me like it's an impossible argument to win. You're battling too much.
Well, but it doesn't mean I'm going to quit. Just because it's hard doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
Well,
this nothing has been easy what I've done. I mean,
I agree. It's just that I think it, and this is where, you know, we were joking about it earlier before we got on the started the podcast. You know, it's the is that a good use of Craig Rote resources? Now, I can't control how you use your resources, use your time, but I'm thinking that the effort spent trying to get that elite athlete to stick with handball would be better used, you know, introducing more athletes to the sport, or maybe just introducing that athlete to the sport so that he knows what handball is. And when his basketball career doesn't pan out, he's ready to come right back in, maybe as a college freshman who already sort of knows the rules of the game, so that he's not starting at ground zero.
And that's great if you were the modeling what I should do. Part of my passion is coaching elite athletes, though. Part of my, like, one of the joys of my life is being able to work with high aptitude athletes. I mean, working with the Deaf national team has been one of the greatest things for me, because these players have all been bypassed because of their inability to hear in a game context. But they're elite athletes, and there's things I can just do with them that I can't do with players. So,
but I'm telling you right now, Craig, there's people listening to this podcast that are saying, well, you might think those are elite athletes, but they're really not quite elite. They're good, but they're not quite elite.
Are we speaking of my current youth, or are we speaking of the Deaf national team players?
I would say probably both.
I would disagree on the Deaf national team players. On the youth, definitely not tier one athletes. But there's so few of those in a community. I might have one or two.
I mean, take example of Gallaudet. You know, it's a Division III school. There have been a handful of deaf athletes who have gone and played Division One in basketball, despite their handicap. But you know, and I'm not saying, you know, Division Three athlete's not a great athlete, but you're going to get the devil's advocate is going to say it. You know, they're good athletes. They're not elite.
I will say this about this is a total side argument, but I will say why the deaf athletes are so impressive is because when you're a deaf athlete, you play for your basketball team, you play offense and defense for your football team. They're the total consummation of this argument against sport specialization, in that they are so generalized in everything they can do. They've made themselves into incredible athletes because they play for every team on their high school teams. They play every sport. They play five sports. Some of these guys played four or five sports at Gallaudet.
Yeah.
So,
well, I will say I do come up with, you know, some background on this because I was on the national team with Richard Jacobs, and he was a great athlete. If he was taller, he would have been an elite handball player. He just was, you know, a little bit undersized, but. And, you know, I bet you if you were to ask the other guys who played on the national team I did, they'll say, like, he is the most intense person I have ever played with. I don't know if it had anything to do with his being deaf or not, but he never went less than 100%. Oh. It didn't matter what the drill was, you know, I've heard people talk about Michael Jordan intensity, but this guy never let up. If he was a bigger guy, he would have been an Olympian. There's no doubt in my mind.
We have two crossovers. So one of my deaf athletes, deaf national team players, plays on the junior national team, played a huge role in us winning the North American Championships, playing both overtimes at Pivot. And one of our other players, Jason Coleman, just made made the pool, the national team pool, for USA team handball. So, I mean, there's these guys are amazing athletes. But to go back to the youth in the tier one, I'm never satisfied with where I'm at, with what I have or where I'm at. And I need similar or better athletes to push the ones I'm currently training to be better and to increase the quality all around. Because once I'm at, if I could double my population right now of high aptitude athletes, call them whatever, tier one, tier two, I don't care. It doesn't bother me what we call it. If I could double the population, I could have an amazing opportunity to grow. Once I get to this 30 to 40 number of athletes, things that to me, that's where everything will change. That once I have that large of a group training daily and weekly together, it's going to be an amazing growth time for handball in the Chicago area and for the nation.
Again, that's where we diverge a little bit, because I think it's tough to get those elite athletes. And I guess I if I was to say, you know, somebody talking about the same way about basketball, unless you're setting up a Nike club team of some respect, you know, it's at those age levels with youth athletes, you're kind of I guess you can do a little bit of recruiting the way you're set up, but to a certain extent you're stuck with the athletes that raise their hand and that want to play. And out of all those athletes that raise their hand and want to play, you're going to get maybe one or two that could be playing something else at an elite level. Maybe one or two that, for whatever reason, they're not playing basketball, football, or whatever at the elite level, but they're just perfect for handball and that they can become a great athlete. But I guess this goes to the argument. You know, it's a numbers game, a challenging numbers game, where, you know, the strong survive. You know, the pyramid goes up to the top. You might have 40 athletes. Out of those 40 athletes, maybe one or two, if you're lucky, become a national team athlete someday.
But that's a hypothetical argument to make. I'm not into hypothetical arguments. I can tell you where I'm at, where I've been, and where I'm going. I can't even engage in that. I mean, because that's not even based in re not it's based in an idea, but it's not based in reality. And the reality
Well,
is
hold on.
that
Take a
stuff.
typical high school. Take Barrington High School. How many high schools do they have?
One.
One. How many pro basketball players have come out of Barrington High School?
Pro basketball, probably zero. Pro football, a bunch.
Bunch, because there's more athletes, playing on NFL rosters, 53-man rosters,
Yeah.
making a roster for a couple years. That's still a tremendous achievement, but it's tough to do.
But this is a side argument that's better suited for a different venue. Like for me, I'm a pragmatic person, and like I'm always doing. And so the idea isn't to have if I had to have the ideal situation to begin with, I would have never started. Taking a sport no one's heard of that's wonderful and magical and bringing it to them takes so much work beyond. You can't look at an end result. You can only look at where you're at right now, have very narrow focus. You can't look to the periphery. You have to just look at where you're now. Every time you make a mistake, and I've made a ton. I mean, I've made so many mistakes. Like, and so I'm kind of in the Seinfeld realm where my original George Costanza decisions, I just do the opposite of that, and I'm doing much better. But I learned, how to approach PE teachers versus administration. I learned how to deal with athletes. Like one of the things for me with coaching athletes or coaching coaches is teaching them how to recruit athletes. You gotta know what to say to them. And so you fail at first and you lose some. I mean, I've had
You
some
lie
great.
to them. You
What?
lie to them. I'm
No,
doing my Donald Trump impersonation.
you don't lie to them. You tell them it's gonna be tough, but then you find out something of value because each athlete has something that they want and they don't get from so many sports. They wanna
Guys.
feel a part of something. And it may not be that not everyone's worried about scholarships. Some people are generally interested in the game, and handball has so much more to offer than other sports.
Yeah. Well, I was just touching on, you talk to someone that went through the recruiting game for college, and they may not use the lie word, but they say, "Wow, those recruiters, they really knew how to make me feel good, make me really feel like this was the place I wanted to be." Maybe you exaggerate, you tell something in such a different way. I mean,
No,
I'm getting on a little bit of a tangent
I
here.
disagree, but I want to go back to that because I completely disagree with that.
I'm talking more about the NCAA college game,
Yeah,
Brian.
you're talking because you're talking about a different game completely. But in the end, like especially with these millennials and younger, they're looking for something that's not financial based and not, they're looking for something deeper. I really truly believe this, and I think handball offers something deeper because it is a community. I mean, it really is. Like when you go to the national, like I was joking the other day, we had the XPS Network North American Cup, completely separate during the Chicago tournament. There wasn't a team on the court that didn't have a player that I didn't coach or play with on all the teams. There wasn't a team on the court that I couldn't go. I coached him at this tournament. I had him at this tournament. I had him for 2 years. And so like there wasn't a team on the court that I didn't have that connection with. And that's something special about handball. In the same way that we shake hands before games, even with guys we don't like, there's something different about handball that I think is a selling point of handball.
It speaks to, this whole argument speaks to the larger contention in the way the U.S. has built their national teams in the past, and with the idea that we take the very best athletes we can get and then we teach them how to play handball. And the argument that you'll get from people is that if I can take a former Division I college basketball player and give him time to learn the sport, he is going to be better than that athlete who was not Division I capable, who has been playing handball for a little bit longer. That's the argument that you're going to get from people with the development versus the national team focus.
But I'm always going to have to bridge both. I mean, I have to bridge both. I have feet firmly entrenched in both camps. So I'm a national team coach, and I'm the head of development in the United States for the committee. So I have to balance both. My goals always are to increase my number one goal is always to increase the number of kids playing handball. Always the number one goal. Number two goal is to increase the quality of handball, which gets broken into two parts, increasing the quality of coaching, which is a passion of mine, and increasing the quality of players, which is another passion of mine. And the third is to increase the opportunity for people to play. And that's it. A lot of the arguments that people want to make, I can't even go into them because that's my focus in this world. I mean, it really is. I could have been a novelist, but this opened up for me. The IHF supports me. USA Team Handball supports me. And now I'm fully focused on it. And it's a great opportunity for me, but those are the three things. Increase the numbers, increase the quality, increase the participation.
So I am all for increasing the quality increasing the numbers at younger levels. And for sure, increasing the quality too. But to me, it's that numbers game. You know, if we can increase the numbers.
These kids that aren't going to be – that these kids that might be tier two, like you say, and may not make the national team, they're going to become coaches. They're going to become stewards of the game. They're going to become ambassadors. They're going to become bankers someday who are going to be like, I loved this sport. I'm going to put money into this sport. We have to start looking at it like a whole system instead of just these individual, whether is it development or is it elite. I mean, we can't think that way. These kids were planting seeds that we're going to water now. We may not see the flower grow, but it might.
Yeah. My only argument to that is we don't have unlimited resources.
But I've done it on my own. I've done all of this on my own. Everything I've done has been on my own. And now I've got funding coming in for it through my own connections, but it wasn't it was more time than money.
Right. But we could focus more resources on development and eschew our elite efforts with the idea that we would then have a broad enough base, you know, get six or seven Craig Rhodes instead of one out there. Broaden that base so that you can then build an elite program.
And I think in a way, I think that's just what I'm doing. And I don't ask permission and I don't have to. I mean, I'm lucky in that I can keep going forward.
Right.
That I have the opportunity to build. I mean, I love building. I love going into a school and I love watching on week four the kids' faces when they don't want to say goodbye to me. When I've introduced it to a new school because they're having so much fun in my program.
Well, I for one would love to see that replicated.
And I think I have the opportunity more so now with this new committee starting, with a new role at the IHF starting. I think I have more of a role to play with building here and within the United States.
Yeah. All right. I think we've covered a number of topics. I do have one. Okay, one other semi-controversial topic, and that's when you put together
Can you pause 1 second? One second. Keep talking.
Well, I'll keep talking. He's coming back, and that's the issue of when we do put Slap USA on the jersey.
And
when we do Slap USA on the jersey for these teams, typically we've got a mixture of people that have learned the sport in the U.S., and then we've also got some guys coming in. Maybe they were born in the U.S., maybe they've got an American parent, and we mix those teams together. And, you know, some of it's funded by the IHF. You know, some of it's funded by the kids themselves, but there's a significant amount of resources in putting together teams like that. And obviously you've had some teams where bringing in some of those players really helped helps competitive wise put together a better team, but that also can hinder the development within the U.S. when we have a team with a ringer on it, if you will, you know, somebody that's
Handball's a difficult sport to have a ringer on because it's, you can 4-0 plus 2 or 5-0 plus 1 and take the ringer out and force everybody else to play. So I think what is more important is the transference of all the knowledge. And I'll give you an example. So we have a left back was born in the United States, has been playing in Eastern Europe for a few years and came with us this last summer to Sweden. And I can think about my American-born right back or left back that's been playing in my program for a couple years, but they would sit out in the playground with the handball nets and the lines all drawn up in Sweden, and for hours, just the transference of knowledge, just showing him every type of shot he's ever learned, talking to him about situations, and this situation do this, and this situation do that. And those are like invaluable opportunities for these players to come into contact with guys that are playing at a high level. Now, some of these guys that are playing at a high level probably aren't tier one athletes. You call them ringers, but they're probably not tier one athletes. Communities, but they're playing in sound programs, programs that I'm modeling mine after.
Yeah. Well, that's historically has been the case. If somebody was really good and they could choose which country to play for, they might very well not choose the U.S.
These are all hypotheticals, and I can't go into hypotheticals. We have to take advantage of a situation that is that only 12 guys play for German national team. You know, there's really the range of 12 to 20 pool players with so many thousands of kids playing. There's going to be people that are left out. Now, are they not Americans? No, they have American passport. How can you, this whole distinction is erroneous to me because there's so much to take advantage of. And it's not just the opportunities for them to play. I mean, they're Americans. They can play for America. Most of my guys, there's not one I can think of that's not like, unnaturally like fixated with American stuff that are from this population of ringers, if you want to call them that, that aren't just like pro-America this, pro-America that. So it's not like these guys don't know anything about America. You know, their moms are Americans, their dads are Germans. I mean, how does that make them less? I mean, so we're lucky to have that transference of knowledge because I can't spend that time with that left back for 3 hours out on a court just talking about all the situations I've faced because I've got a team of 16 and a staff of 4 to take care of. Yeah. I can't give that. But these and players
I like it when it's just a handful, you know, and you get kind of a numbers issue. You got maybe one or two helping giving some of that transference on the court and in the practice. But then if it becomes too many guys from overseas populating a team, then it becomes more of an issue of, you know, who are we developing here? Are we developing the guys that Craig Rope has developed in Illinois? Or are we putting together a team, you know, for respectability, and we're actually hindering some of the development because those guys are getting the court time versus, you know, the guy playing in the United States doesn't have all that opportunity. I sense there's some sort of balance that you have to work there.
Well, the way I've always looked at it is this, and I don't look at where they come from. So there always is a progression of my rosters. So I'll give you an example. The first time I went to Sweden, it was probably 4 elite players, 4 role players, and 4 players that we need to have a team but likely aren't going to be in the program in 2 years, 3 years. But we can't have a team with these guys if we don't give them this opportunity. So they are providing the basis upon which that the whole system. And now this second year, it was about 8 elite players and 4 role players and none of that lower banked team. And now I have, when I played the Canadian champs, I had 12 guys that could score. I knew at any point in time, no matter what the circumstances, I had 12 guys that could score.
Yeah.
And so that was a great place to be because I've never coached through this youth development process. I had never gotten to that point yet. I could score from every position. I knew I had 5 to 8 pivot goals. I knew I had 6 to 10 wing goals, and I knew I had 12 backcourt goals, 15 backcourt goals. So I knew I had the goals coming from anywhere, and if they took out one guy, I knew the other guys would step up. Unfortunately, the flu knocked out 6 of my players for that championship game against Canada, and I was left with very little roster. Guys that were averaging 3-4 minutes a game were now playing 40 minutes a game because I was missing 6 players. But on paper, we had gotten to a point, and it was through this kind of mixing, and now we're going to play solely Craig Rhodes, Illinois guys, well, Illinois, Minnesota, Kansas, North Carolina guys.
And see, that's what I really like, you know, and I guess, you know, I got nothing against the dual citizens, you know, the people that, you know, have that American connection. It's just, I look at the opportunity like going to Sweden and playing there, and I feel like that's something that could be transformative for someone in a Barrington, you know, program or, you know, San Francisco or anywhere. And if that person doesn't get a roster spot because, you know, an American who's playing in Germany, France, or whatever takes that spot, you know, that's somebody that misses out on a transformative opportunity.
But there's also a transformative opportunity and success, and it fuels high aptitude players. To have one or two of these guys come in, and they're essential right now in this kind of stage of building, like they said, the transference of knowledge and skills, they see them operating, and it creates all sorts of ideas in their own heads, and they start playing that way because they see it. They're next to it. They start to understand and get a feel for feinting that they never got before because they don't have the experience of it, because we don't have enough games against competition to really work on game-like feinting. I mean, it's just – you can't do it in practice. It's only in games that it really matters most. And so for me, it's these transformative power is there for them. I mean, they bond, they talk, it's like a cultural thing, and they reinforce that this isn't a made-up sport by me. I mean, that's what the article said, but this is true. So the Gothenburg Post ran 2 stories about us. The first one was about me, and the second one was about Julio doing so awesome with the girls team that had only played in my program 3 months. They beat some of the best European teams, and they'd only been playing in my program 3 months. But the article about me, the headline was, "It's nice to know it's nice for them to finally figure out I didn't invent this sport in my basement," is what the translation of it was. But until we go there and they see not just other kids playing it, but they are teammates against guys that get to play it, you know, 5 days a week in the youth Bundesliga. Sure. I mean, I think it's invaluable. I don't look at it as a hindrance at all because it increases the quality of play and the desire to play.
If they make that roster. And they get to play with that. If they make that roster and they can get that transference, you know, only so many people can go on a tournament like that.
Oh, I agree. And it's going to get harder and harder and harder. I mean, because now, because I'm competing so much in Europe, I get more contact from more Europeans that are dual citizens.
And that's my point. For a dual citizen kid to go to Partili and participate, it's a good experience for them, but for an American kid who doesn't have all those opportunities to play on a regular basis, that can be a transformative opportunity to them. I mean, a tremendous opportunity. And if we ever have a roster that's primarily dual citizens at Partili, to me, that's a real negative.
But this last year, look at this team. So the team I brought this year in the 15s was one dual citizen. The rest are kids out of my program. We were goal for goal for 3/4 of the game against the Icelandic champions, the Norwegian champions, and the Swedish champions. All those games ended because of our lack of game experience, close game experience in the last few minutes, because they play 40 games a year and we only play 8 a year, and they're all at Partille. And so, but it was just one dual citizen.
And our that's other, great. I love that situation.
And our other group made the A playoffs with the younger team with only one dual citizen and all the rest of the base of out of my programs. And so now we have this opportunity to go to US Ivory and compete this summer against top French clubs. And I'm able, because it's not a tournament, I'm able to take more kids with. But it's going to be a great experience because we can mix and match more because I can take more. And so I'm really looking for this to be a really foundational experience for everyone that becomes involved in this opportunity to play in, against top French clubs. I mean, they're going to play PSG. those are going to be tough games. We're going to get our butts kicked. But
well, they're not going to play the top PSG team.
No, but you're going to play the 17s from PSG, which are incredible.
Yeah.
So we're going to see again. Here's another transformative experience where you're going to see even better quality and have to compete against it. I mean, I'm so proud of my guys. We played Canada. Like, even Mike from Alberta said it, like how much we had grown in just a year and a half as a program. I mean, these kids have only played handball a year and a half. And we won a game. I mean, and we beat Alberta, who's come out of all – Alberta has the most profound program in all of Canada, along with Quebec. And they play 40 games a year and spend a month in Europe together on two separate two-week trips. So the fact that my guys in their first ever games in the United States, I mean, it's their first ever games in the United States, were able to play at such a great level. I mean, I was so disappointed for them because of the flu. And Mike's teams are brilliant teams. They're so technically and tactically sound. I mean, they're models.
They can't be that good if your rookies were able to beat them in a game.
But they are because I had better athletes. Mike would agree with this. I have a better tier of athlete.
Wow.
I have a better tier of athlete.
That's why
I disagree with you on this, because in each of the games, like, so the Icelandic goalkeeper came to me after our game, and he runs that team FH, and we narrowly lost to. And he came and he's like, I've never scouted an American team before, but your guys are so big. He's like, they're so strong, you know, and they're all, you know, I have guys that are 14 that are 6'1 and 190, and they're 14 years old, and they look like men. And so it's, I don't even like to take them on in practice. They're so big.
So it's going to be like the Dominican Republic baseball team. Are we going to have to get the birth certificates on your roster to verify?
I'll tell you the truth. One of the kids, here's the honest truth. One of the boys is so big and older looking, I'd put him on the older team, just assuming he was a 2001, and I was shocked to learn that he was still 13 when he tried out and was a 2002.
Yeah, or the actual Dominican Republican handball team too. Now that I remember, they got in trouble for some overage players.
No, well, I don't have overage players, but I've got early bloomers.
That's awesome. Hey, Greg, I was going to wrap up. Is there any other topics that we didn't cover?
No, I think we covered enough. We're both passionate. I appreciate the opportunity to make my ideas known, and I look forward to discrediting yours in the years to come.
Oh, please, please. You know what? If we're at the 2024 Olympics, and you know, I'm looking at the on the roster, and it just has like the clubs, and it says, you know, Barrington, 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 or even better yet, it says Barrington/PSG, Barrington/Kiel, Barrington/Vesprem. And you've been assigned as the head coach because you have taken all of these players. Hey, I will love to attend those games and then have like 10,000 people visiting my site daily because we've got handball all across the country. I will love that.
Well, I like the last part. I like the handball. I can't guarantee any of the first part, but I can work on hard that handball across the country part.
All right.
Thanks so much, John.
Hey, Greg, thanks for saying, for taking the time to chat with me today, and we'll chat with you again
Okay.
down the line.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.